The next part of our presentation is our keynote presentation, and I'm very excited that Ray Simon was able to join us here today. As you all know, Ray Simon is the Deputy Secretary of Education at the department. He moved into that post last May after serving a stint as the department's Assistant Secretary for Elementary and Secondary Education. Before coming to Washington, Deputy Secretary Simon was the Chief State School Officer for the state of Arkansas and has a long education career in Arkansas. I learned yesterday that he actually was a Director of Education Technology, which was very exciting. He also has been a math teacher, a district administrator, and a college professor. And so we are thrilled to have Deputy Secretary Simon with us here to share some of his thoughts and remarks. Thank you.
Thank you very much. It's an honor and a pleasure to be with you this morning. I brought with me today an instrument that has its roots going back to the Renaissance. Anybody know what this happens to be? Slide rule, that's right. A slide rule. This particular device, by the way, I had a little trouble getting this through security downstairs. Young man said, sir, can you tell me what that is? I said, it's a slide rule. He said, a what? And I said, a slide rule. He took one look at it and determined, I guess looking at me, I'm pretty harmless, so this must be harmless. This particular slide rule is special to me because it was given as a gift to me by my brother in 1963 when I was a high school senior. I took this slide rule to college with me and taught with it the first few years of my teaching career, where we actually had slide rule classes every morning before school for those students who were unlucky enough not to know how to use one. This particular rule is a deluxe model because it's made out of fiberglass. And it has a number of scales on both the front and back and can do quite elaborate calculations. Now, for those that may not be familiar with the slide rule, when I talk about this being a deluxe slide rule made out of fiberglass, that's pretty important because you could get cheap slide rules. You could go buy a slide rule for almost nothing, maybe made out of wood or aluminum or plastic or just about any other product that was available back in that period of time. But the problem with the cheaper ones was that the material could expand or contract depending on the humidity or the temperature. Now, to use a slide rule, you had to have a steady hand. And it's just a matter, I mean, it certainly has an advantage over some of the technology because you don't have to worry about it not coming on when you push the button. There's nothing to turn on or off. There's also a little slide that has a hairline on it, and that's what's real important because when you move that hairline to get your answer, you read the answer under the hairline. Now, if you're a nervous type or you have a slide rule that tends to go to contract and expand, you'll get different answers depending on how nervous you are, whether you work the problem in the middle of the summer or whether you work it right before Christmas break. Another advantage of using a slide rule was that you had to understand how to estimate answers because if you were going to, for example, we'll take a simple problem of multiplying 572 times 1,320. Well, you would position your rule and get an answer. Well, it so happens you would move the slide to the exact same position if you were multiplying 0.572 by 13,200. So you had to know what your answer was because the decimal point doesn't jump out at you from the slide rule. This particular device is also a lot safer than a cell phone because you wouldn't see people driving down the road using a slide rule on their way to work, except perhaps to stir coffee that they might have sitting beside them. This slide rule, or one like it, accompanied the astronauts on several Apollo missions, including to the moon. Another quality that made this particular slide rule a deluxe slide rule was that it came with its own leather carrying case that you could wear on your belt. Now, you think that the Jedi Knights were the first group to have a lightsaber on on the side of their belt. Well, I want to tell you, the slide rule users were the first. Now, I was not powerfully built back when I was in high school, physically powerfully built as I am today. And so a lot of my survival in high school had to do with using my brains rather than muscles. And so anytime a bully or group of bullies might approach me to do harm, I would usually simply stand in front of them and reveal to them my deluxe leather carrying. Upon seeing someone wearing a deluxe leather carrying case, even the bullies will take note and say, well, he's a godlike creature. He knows how to use a slide rule. Let's let him alone. It saved my life more than once. This slide rule was the machine of choice, even into of calculation, even to the computer age. IBM, when it first introduced its one of its first computers, it bragged about it having the power of 150 slide rules. The first slide rule was known as an electronic, the first computer was known as an electronic slide rule, just like the first car was called the horseless carriage. It was a way to bring someone to a technology by referring it to something they were more familiar with. Well, this instrument that carried us from the Renaissance to the moon was rendered obsolete overnight. It was replaced by the microprocessor, which I have with me today in the form of a calculator. Now, calculators could do multiplications, divisions, higher math infinitely faster than the slide rule, with greater precision than the slide rule. You didn't have to worry about whether you were very nervous or not, because surely fingers could hit the keys, and if not, you could hit the clear button and start over pretty quickly. You also very likely will get the same answer when you use a calculator, whether you're working in the middle of the summer or just before your Christmas break. But you can't look cool carrying a calculator. I don't know of many of these that come with a deluxe leather carrying case that you can put on the side of your belt. And if it did, I'm not sure how many bullies it would deter. In fact, if a bully saw you having one of these, they'd steal it from you. George Lucas, who gave us among other things, the Star Wars episodes, is a true master at special effects. I had someone do a little research for me, and I'll have to read this. According to the George Lucas Educational Foundation, a typical 10-second special effects battle scene would require 5 times 10 to the 16th power. That's 5 followed by 16 zeros, math computations. It would take one microprocessor 40 days to render those 10 seconds. Now, I've tried to sit down and imagine how somebody would do that on a slide rule. Even if you had the ability to do it, you'd go so fast making those calculations, the friction would probably burst this thing into flames. So there would be no Star Wars if there were still slide rules as the primary vehicle for computation. It took a wizard to use a slide rule. The calculator has brought that power to the average human being. This revolution in making technology of all kinds available. I'm sitting here talking into two devices that are going to turn this into a podcast. This revolution has brought to critical mass the opportunity of our students to have, and our teachers to have, access to unlimited capabilities for teaching and learning. And I remember when computers first, when I started working on computers, we had the computers that were housed in a separate room. There was no processing down into the microprocessor wasn't invented, so there was no microprocessors, microcomputers in the classroom. Everything was done from central office and the material brought to that room or taken from that room. And I can remember very clearly when we finally were able to put technology into the classroom and into schools. And I guess for the first time, I've been teaching now in one form or another for more than 40 years. And when technology entered the classroom, that was the first time in my memory that I saw a teaching tool and a teaching subject into schools where the teachers knew less about it than the kids. And in fact, the teachers depended on the kids to come in and turn it on, maneuver through the menus or whatever there were in those early days, and then very likely fix it if it didn't work. The children were far ahead of us. I find it interesting. I don't want to steal too much thunder on the reports of the findings, but one thing that I thought was interesting in this survey, and if you don't mind, I'll preempt you on that one issue, was that in this latest survey, about half of students there say they are now learning about new technologies from teachers and parents. That's a turnaround. Maybe we're back in charge again. Brad mentioned a moment ago about one of the priorities of this Congress now is in talking about the reauthorization of No Child Left Behind. One of the biggest, in fact, the biggest, in my opinion, national effort at coalescing and bringing to critical mass the great teaching and learning we have in this country and bring it to national scale. We've always had fabulous teachers, outstanding students in our country. But for too long, it has been the luck of the draw as to whether or not a young person would get an outstanding teacher. The luck of the draw. And that's not right. Many states began to recognize this in a serious way a number of years ago, some sooner than others, to say that we want those good teachers to be everywhere. We want every child in the United States and within our states to have a teacher of the year every year, a principal of the year every year, to go to a blue ribbon school every year. No Child Left Behind, in my opinion, gives this country the best chance for that happening, as long as it continues to be a true partner with the states, and the states with their teachers and students in individual classrooms. If we don't stay true to that mission, then we stand the risk of graduating too many of our kids with slide rule skills in a world that demands computer skills. Is this what we want for our graduates? Do we want to hand them a slide rule when they walk across the stage to get their diploma? I think you would agree the answer is no. But that's in effect what we're going to do to them if they don't leave high school with skills necessary to compete in the global economy that we find ourselves in today. Secretary Spellings has announced a series of roundtables to be held between now and the end of August throughout the country on the subject of technology and its impact on student learning. The first roundtable is going to be Friday of this week in New York City. The Secretary spent a lot of time, as have a number of the rest of us in the department, in visiting with CEOs, professional business people, teachers, parents, students, practitioners that utilize technology. Many of these individuals are concerned about the skill sets that they see young people coming from high school with, either into the world of work or into higher education, formal higher education. There have been enormous sums of money, public and private, federal, state, and local, spent on technology over the past several years. The roundtables will engage its participants to talk about what we have gotten for those investments, the extent to which those investments have been leveraged to increase student achievement, and how we might best spend our technology funds in the future. Now, kids, as we've seen today and as we know, live with technology every day. Even an old guy like me has had to adjust from being a slide rule guy to a computer guy. I remember when I was in college and even late in high school, I never left home without two things: a picture of my girlfriend and my slide rule. Today, at the age of 62, I never leave home without a picture of my grandkids and my iPod. Now, I look forward to somehow, I haven't had my iPod that long, and all I have on here is music. But I look forward to this podcast today being the first podcast that I download into my iPod to see how that works. I live every day and work every day with 20-somethings. I have a 20-something that accompanies me when I travel to make sure that I know where I'm going and I get there on time and get out on time. You don't see anybody in Washington, D.C. that's of any importance unless a 20-something gives you permission to go through the door. Most of the policy that we discuss at our department and that we work with Congress on and the White House on, most of those policy issues have been thoroughly discussed by 20-somethings. The World is Flat, number of other books you read. After I read The World is Flat and after my experience in Washington, D.C. with 20-somethings, I was convinced that the world is going to be run by 20-somethings. The old traditional system that I grew up with, and that many of you grew up with, where you start off in a low position, usually in your business or occupation, even if you're teaching. You don't always get the best classroom early. You'll get the one down in the basement in the corner that used to be a closet. That's your first classroom. And you work your way up to a classroom that's got windows and maybe air conditioning. Well, now you do if you're lucky. First few years I taught, my room was right across the alleyway from the music room, which was the only room in the building that had an air conditioner. Not only did I not get advantage of the air conditioner, but I had the exhaust from the air conditioner coming through my windows that were open trying to get some fresh air. I finally worked my way up to an air-conditioned classroom. And then only later in business do you achieve the CEO position or higher level in the company. That was generally the track. Now, that's, in my opinion, that's all going to change. The 20-somethings are going to be the CEOs. They're going to be the ones that can speak numerous languages. They're going to be the ones that can capitalize on technology to know how to be competitive, which makes it even more important that we not hand them a slide rule when they leave high school. They have to hit the ground running and be ready today. We cannot afford for those young people to lose not one year of their schooling. We cannot afford for them to have a year without a good, not even good, a great teacher, and to capitalize on the technology that's available to them to make those teachers greater and to make teaching better. Our teachers also depend on technology to help them better understand what these young people know and don't know. I visit a lot of schools as I travel around the country, and I talk to good teachers, teachers that have taken schools that by any standard were just not performing well and turned those schools around. I ask them, what's your secret? Among other things, the one common secret is we use data every day. Before I walk into my classroom, I know exactly where each of my students is on the subject I'm about to teach. I know what weaknesses each one of them has and what needs to be targeted. I teach a lot smarter today than I did when I started teaching. Even the teachers that have been teaching for decades see the value of data and using technology in their classrooms. They're not content with turning out slide rule skills in a computer world. Those are the teachers we have to continue to support, and that's what No Child Left Behind is really all about. One thing that we have to fear more than anything else is complacency. I talk to a lot of schools, and I've been involved personally in working in a number of schools. And schools many times will say, a good school particularly. You know, someone once said that good is the enemy of great. Hey, we're doing a good job with our kids. We're doing a great job with our kids. Look at our test scores. Look at our parent satisfaction. Look at the successes of our students. They're going to college. They're successful in the workforce. We're a great school. Don't tell us we need to change. And to them, I would give this admonition that I will close with today. about the contentment of being good today and being content with the status quo. My grandchildren, I have my young grandson Alex is 5 and my granddaughter Anna is 2. And I can picture one of them in about 30 years coming before a group such as this, talking about the use of technology and the value of education. And I can see Alex or Anna beginning their presentation like this. I brought something very special with me today. Does anybody know what this is? This is an electronic calculator. This was the machine of choice for computation back when my granddad was still working. In the late 20th and early 21st centuries, it became obsolete overnight. Thank you very much. It'll take me a few minutes to gather all my material, just bear with me.
I learned so much more about a slide rule this morning than I ever knew before.
We were ready in case Y2K really did materialize as a problem. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Well, thank you very much, Mr. Simon. That was both entertaining and very informational, not only on the slide rule, but on the perspective of the scope of how far we've come and where we're going. And that's really what we're here to talk about today. What are we learning from today's students about their use of technology that will help us inform the policies and programs to support what they're doing today? What are we going to learn from their teachers and parents that can help us with those programs and policies as well?